A very big aloha. I am so thrilled to have someone who's such an inspiration to me, Stephen Melillo, here. And I've had the joy of working with Stephen on a project or two now. And I've been following his inspiring music, which touches me so deeply. I rarely find someone who can capture spirit and tell the story of life and death and the continuing spirit that goes on and on as beautifully as Stephen Melillo does. Stephen has such a huge catalog of work. I mean, it's amazing. He did so many symphonies. I think that's four. Lightfall was nominated for a Pulitzer and Nemmer's Prize in Music. Also winner of the 2009 Telly and AVA Awards for his 2005 visualized concert that he did, That We Might Live. He's a teacher. He is someone who actually has done over 1,000 pieces. And this particular one we're going to talk about today, Stormworks 2-3, has been in the works for 2 years, Stephen? Is that it? 2 years in the making?
Yeah, the Gray 2-3. Mm-hmm. So The Gray was like the first album that I had done. And it was really a collection of intimate sort of prelude quality pieces. Like I call them haikus. And they're like pieces that I write after something big. Like, so say I write like a concerto for tuba. The way for me to decompress and to come back to the center is to write one of these musical haikus. So I did an album called The Gray, and then Kurt DeMott says, you have to do another album. And that led to The Gray 2-3. So it's actually two CDs of music. It's 141 minutes of music. And there is a continuation of The Gray story. So that's what it is. The Gray 2-3 is an album that's actually two CDs and a continuation of this arc of stories that has to do with the gray, which is a metaphor for the things that we face and struggle with. Like, for instance, one morning I was outside and I saw, I go to this place called Poet, the place of eternal training. And every morning I go to watch the sunrise to see what God has painted that day. And one morning I went there and it's the inevitable totally gray sky, dark. And I think a lot of people would say, oh, it's going to be one of those kind of days. But I realized that it was an illusion because behind those clouds, there was still a sunrise. And the seagulls were still doing their thing. The ospreys were still doing their thing. And I realized that it was a kind of an illusion that we were meant to face this idea of this gray veil. It temporarily obscures our vision here and spiritually. And that's what triggered this whole idea to create a suite of pieces, short pieces, musical haiku pieces in this body of work that I call The Gray.
I've listened to it over and over and over again. And just like a haiku, the first time you read a haiku, you may think you have an understanding of what's meant. But if you look at the haiku in another way and maybe another state of mind, you find something else. And I find that your depth of the story of life, the illusion and the actual opening to spirit is captured in that way that is so mysterious and at the same time really resonates with anyone that's gone through life and known the pain. And also the lessons from the pain and what comes from that, well, I would say the lifting of the spirit when you do learn those lessons. And that's, I think, what I love the most are these songs that are so exceptional. And you have such beautiful people who are actually a part of this project. Maybe you could show us on the screen some of the people who became a part of this. Now, as we go into this, people, I'd like everyone to realize that this is a huge project. Most people these days, most people that put one song out and maybe another, maybe a second song out, and maybe a third. And you're lucky if you get 10 pieces on a release these days. You know that's the way it is, Stephen. But with the grade two and three, how many pieces are on this release?
There's 36 pieces in the grade two and three. You know, I used to... By the way, are you seeing the screen right now? Yeah. Are you okay? Good.
Yeah.
Good. I used to tell my composition students, composition is the art of knowing what not to write. And the reason I used to say that is because so many ideas are coming in all the time. Like I really do not relate to the person who experiences writer's block. That's not something that has ever really happened to me. I have sort of the reverse where it's like, please turn off. Please stop for a second so that I can sleep. I think that you probably know, I sleep on average about 3 hours a day. And the older I get, the less sleep I need.
Well, I hate to admit it, but it's becoming that way with me as well. It's like, I hope it's not contagious. But you know what? I'll get up at 12 or one, sometimes 1 o'clock or 2 o'clock. And I'll just go, I've got this idea. I've got to write. Mm-hmm. And you know what? I'm thinking, well, probably I should sleep, but I'm going,
No.
When you get a nudge from spirit, you have to listen. In fact, this morning I wrote something about when spirit speaks, because you did a beautiful explanation, as you often do. And which is also carried through in this work, about how there are amazing coincidences, which those coincidences are happening as well, definitely in what you're doing in this piece. I see it over and over again, how these influences totally reflect back to you what is happening in your life.
Here's sort of an interesting coincidence right here, Cindy. Here's a very interesting coincidence. So the gray 2-3 was just released on Thanksgiving. Now, in this piece here, Once I Dreamed of Love, Ida's Pen, it's the story about this guy right here, who is Colonel Ed Shames. And the Colonel was part of what a lot of people know as the Band of Brothers. He was the guy that led those forces all the way from D-Day into Paris, through Holland, the whole thing. And he passed away last night.
I see,
I consider that an interesting coincidence, but I hesitate to use the word coincidence because it makes it sound like it's just sort of like an accidental coming together of variables. I don't think that way. I think that these things are mathematically connected in ways which exceed coincidence, and mathematically they reach a level, what I call sync, where things have come together in a way which defy normal mathematics. And don't get me started on that, because I've done, I was a physics major my first year of college, and my mind is very mathematically oriented. And so I've done all kinds of mathematical research on phenomenon that are happening in these whole collisions of events. So, but I wanted to share that with you because he just passed away. Now here, there's another level to this. He, Colonel Shames, was one of the first guys that liberated the camps, where the Nazis were holding the Jews. Now, what's interesting about that, you say? Well, the day before Colonel Shames died, I put a post on Facebook about my piece Festival of Light, which is about Hanukkah, but shared the story behind that, where at the premiere of that piece was two people who fell in love at a concentration camp. So they were 16 years old at the time. They were in the audience at the premiere of the piece, and Colonel Shames was one of those people that liberated them. So you see, if you follow that in a succession of days, me posting about the Festival of Light, the Spiegels who met in the concentration camp, Colonel Shames being the guy who liberated them from that camp. I mean, that I don't know about anybody in the universe, but I get chills thinking about stuff like that, because it's a constant reminder to me that there is a God, that there is a spiritual world, that there is a spirit that imbues all things.
There are so many stories that you have like this that are beyond coincidence that I do realize that you recognize, and that through this music, people can understand that spirit works in very mysterious ways. And you work on a few levels. I've always felt, Stephen, there's many dimensions to our work and nothing is done by mistake. And I know you capture that. And right now we're seeing on the screen some of the beautiful artists who are so wonderful, who are participating. Most of these people have done at least a couple of pieces. Mm-hmm. I know I listened to Christopher McCruel.
Yes.
Oh my gosh. And he does a piece that is just so, so beautiful. Even she?
Not even she, was her.
Was her. It's probably the most unusual piece I've ever seen written, but totally makes sense, I'm sure, to a lot of people who have this deeper sense of longing and wishing to find that energy that you find in spirit and know is behind a lot of people. He was so beautiful. How did you find him to do that lovely piece? And tell me a little of the story behind that piece.
Yeah, so Christopher was singing at Busch Gardens, which is in Williamsburg, which is about 20 minutes away from me. And I just loved his voice. I loved his personality. I, you know how it is. You're just like, there's just some people you just go, God, I love this guy. I want to meet this guy. Well, he was one of those guys. And I went up to him bravely after one of his performances at Busch Gardens. And I said, hey man, you want to come over my place sometime and do some recording? And he was like, sure. So I tried to find the pictures. I took some impromptu pictures of him in this room doing the record. I couldn't find those pictures. It's back in the past somewhere. But, you know, right here in the Storm Lab, I mean, not a studio. I mean, this is where, you know, we put up a microphone and Chris sang Not Even She Was Her. And for a guy, you know, as young as he is, he deeply understood it, you know. And there's another piece that he sings, which is Lullaby. Mm. And Lullaby is sung from the perspective of a father singing to his daughter who is serving, let's say, in Afghanistan or serving in Iraq or something like that. They're away from home. And the father is singing to her like he used to do when she was a baby. So there's a certain degree of maturity that you have to understand that kind of music making. And it definitely is something gray, isn't it? I mean, if you're a parent and you have a child who's serving in the military and they're overseas in a war, I mean, that's gray. You're praying on your knees with sweat coming out of your brow every night. Please God protect my child. And you don't know what's going on because it's a veil. It's a gray. And of course, these are all connected, right? Because there's another piece in there called My Daddy's Heart is Purple. And that's about a dad who actually did lose a child. And he wrote a book. And then I wrote a piece sort of inspired by the book about what it's like to lose a child.
You also have a lovely lady I got to meet through you, who I know is a hero to you and has a voice like an angel, who's a concert violinist. And yes, you know who I'm talking about, Catherine Geach. What an amazing woman she is. And you have her on some very, again, haunting pieces that she does that talks from that angelic realm of sorts. Can you explain how you wove her into the pieces and the pieces she sings on?
Well, there's so much to it, right? A person needs to be a musician, right? They need to have the craft and the physical ability to deliver music. But there's this other huge dimension, which is what is their life's experience? Because if your life's experience is 14 hours of practice a day, when you hear the music such people make, it sounds like 14 hours of practice. But when a person has gone through the trials and tribulations and sacrifices of a person like Catherine Geach, I mean, this is a woman who, when she was 18 years old, left the Royal Academy of Music, went to war-torn Cambodia to work with orphaned children, and using the culture of Cambodian music in the midst of the Khmer Rouge, think about everything I'm telling you here, she resurrected the meaning of their life. She gave those kids a new life. Now, when a person like that is combined with the ability to make music, the technical side of making music, you're going to hear something completely, utterly unique, right? So there's a woman named Edith, and Edith, when she was 10 years old, lost her father in Auschwitz. Can you see all the connections here? Mm-hmm. See how this is all connected? She lost her father in Auschwitz, and her mother was trying to keep her from being discovered as being the daughter of a Jew. So they actually put her into the Hitler Youth when she was 10 years old. I mean, it's like incredible stories. So I said, Edith, can you send me your story? Write your story down. And so she did. And she told me her story like on this old typewriter in a couple of pages. And she sent this to me. And I wrote a piece called Edith, about what it was like to be a child growing up in this whole world of the Nazis and yet being innocent and not really understanding the Nazis, so on and so forth, right? Okay. So I gave it to Catherine to play. By the way, it's a piece for a cappella violin. And by that, I just mean a violin with no accompaniment. It's just the violin. And Catherine did this unbelievable job with it that I really, I'm not just saying this, I really don't think another person could play it the way she does. I don't think they could. I mean, could Itzhak Perlman deliver a great rendering of that piece? Absolutely. But it will never be what Catherine Geach did because of all the personal suffering that she has that enables her to relate to that music. So we did this together, right? You know, and by the way, here's another cool thing, right? Catherine recorded that piece, get ready, everybody, on her knees.
And always after prayer. I mean, she's a very devout person who has ego, but does it really for, again, talking about spirit. I mean, her spirit drives her life. Absolutely true.
Yes, yes.
She's on three pieces, right? Or four pieces.
Oh, I don't know offhand. I mean, she's in a song called The Silence Before Silence.
Right.
And she sings on that one because she's also a soprano. And then there's another one, What We Must Leave Behind, which, you see, here's another connection. I wrote for Dame Mary Sigillo Baracco, who was a prisoner of the Nazis in World War II. When she was Catherine's age, she was taking Jewish children and smuggling them out of the country. She became a freedom fighter. She was knighted by Belgium for her service. And so she's actually Dame Mary Sigillo Baracco. And Catherine reminds me of her. And I tell Catherine that all the time. I go, Catherine, you remind me of a young Dame Mary. Your suffering is the same. Your understanding of the plight of humanity is the same. So when she played this piece on her knees with a violin, I mean, I can't even really understand how you do that. We sent it to Edith. Now here, this is really cool. You got to think about this. I said, Edith, here's this song that Catherine and I are giving to you to pay tribute to your life. And Edith turns around and she says, you know what you need to call this? And I said, what? And she said, Gethsemane.
Oh, okay. I didn't put the two of those together. I didn't know
and,
that.
Right. And here's a woman, think about it. Here's a woman whose father died in Auschwitz telling us to rename this piece Gethsemane about the suffering of Jesus before he is crucified. And it was perfect.
Yeah.
And I didn't hesitate. And Catherine was like, yes, by all means, this needs to be Gethsemane.
Yes.
And there it is.
And you do include a beautiful and touching piano piece, Were You There? Which is so simple because you do amazing arrangements, but then you also have those moments of intimacy where it's just a solo piano piece. And Were You There is that, and you might have some accompaniment with it, but it just is so touching that it's just the piano echoing in your mind, and you're able to, for I'm able to imagine being there, what it would like, what it would have been like to be there, you know, standing across. And when you
reach
that, it brings you to that place of understanding that sets you up for the story that you go through in this journey through the valley, which I have to say, Through the Valley is another one of my favorite pieces. I don't know where that was coming from, but there's something so powerful in that song. I know it's not called In the Valley. Maybe it's Through the Valley.
Song from the Valley of Heaven. I was in Colombia, and in the hotel lobby was a piano. And I walked over to the piano, and this, you know how I usually write on napkins, right? This music I wrote on a coaster.
Wow.
And I have the coaster somewhere, and I had the coaster on the piano. And it was the strangest thing. I think it's a combination of where I was and the people that I was with and palm trees and hills. And I think all these things added up in my mind. And that's when I had the idea, I need to write a piece about Ahab. I need to write a piece about Ahab when he was a boy, and not a piece, I'm a book. I need to tell the story, the novel story about Ahab when he was a boy. What turned him into Ahab? What did he go through? What did he suffer through? You see, it's the same thing again, right? What did he go through? And so I created, well, I said he must have been in love, right? This boy must have been in love. And who was he in love with? He was in love with Abby. And so the song from the Valley of Heaven is Abby's theme. And it describes this woman, girl, this woman that young Ahab would fall in love with. So the music actually came first. And then I wrote the novel.
Both those two books I are on Amazon. And also if people go to your website, which is the best site to find that, because you have those posted there and they're both amazing books. That website is?
I think you can find them on Amazon.
Yeah.
For sure. Or you could just go to Storm Gifts. Like if you go to my, here, we can, let me share the screen again. Okay. If you go to my website and you go to Storm Gifts.
There they are.
Right there. Okay.
Yeah.
And you click there. Okay. You'll see, I have a bunch of stuff. You know, like the Christmas Passion CD.
Wonderful.
And there's the Death to Moby Dick, which is the sequel to Moby Dick, okay? Uh-huh. Based on Ahab, a love story, being the prequel to Moby Dick, okay? And these are hardcover books, and, you know, I have an auto, a signed thing and everything like that. And here's a little aside that we can talk about since we're on the internet now. This guy holding the Ahab book is Tom Quinn. He's my best friend from college, and Quinny is a character that appears in the story. Aww. They have a love story. He's a friend of young Abby. Young Ahab doesn't start out as Ahab. He starts off as Abraham.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Abby. Yep. Yeah.
That's right. And Abby is his girlfriend. Yeah. So this is a page where I sort of like separate, you know, you could just quickly go there. If you want to get background, there's a thing called Mel's, right? And Mel's is because there's Melville and Melillo. Ahab love story is the prequel. Moby Dick, correct in the timeline, correct in the history. Yeah. Everything, every bit of history in this book, every bit of history in this book, every astrological sign, everything from geography. I mean, this story happened. Absolutely. And it's the whole, this, and here's, this is cool, Cindy. This goes, if you follow it like this, right?
Yeah.
It's literally going from the American Revolution to the beginning of World War I.
Oh.
And it's all historically accurate. And anybody who loves history,
yeah,
or if you're like, or if you're like me, adventures on the high seas, or you love the story of love, these stories are definitely for you.
Absolutely. Good, good one. Let's go to the tracks back, because there's some tracks okay. I want to go over. We're going to talk about the learned astronomer. There's a backstory on this that blew my mind. And I have to say almost everything you do blows my mind, but the learned astronomer is unlike anything that you people might've heard before. Maybe when I hear this, I'm thinking of the times I was in the planetarium in Los Angeles up in the Hollywood Hills, and the whole ceiling would turn to the stars, and you'd be back there looking up at the ceiling of the stars, and you really feel like you are out in the stars. And this particular piece has a backstory that explains it. And of course, you lead up to this piece with "Surrender, take my hand, twinkle, twinkle, little star, the silence before the silence." And then going through that journey, you come to this magical place where you're in the stars with the learned astronomer.
At the moment that I created the piece, okay, that was a moment that 33 years prior to that, I was at the National, it's called the Natural Bridge in Virginia. And there was this thing there called a Porter Music Box. It's just like this big, what do they call those? Like, you know, like a music box, like, yeah. You know, like you wind them up, like a Christmas kind of a thing. Only this thing uses like big discs, like they're 15-inch discs. Oh my gosh. So anyway, yeah. So this is a disc, right, that plays on that Porter music box. What I did was I said, now, wait a minute. And I looked up into this, because I always used to take pictures of the stars, you know, like open lens photography and stuff. I was a physics major my first year of college, and astronomy was like the thing I was really interested in. So I said, wait a minute, what if I took what I see above my head, the stars, and print them on a circle, which is 15 inches in diameter, and poked out where the stars are, and sent it to the Porter Music House so that they can punch out those little holes of the stars on that disc. Then all I have to do is take the disc back to a place where they have a Porter Music Box. Get ready, quick tangential thing. Where they had the Porter Music Box was Alexandria, Virginia, which is 3 hours and 33 minute drive from me. I went with Dame Mary, who I was just talking about. We went up there together, and we put that, this very disc, we put it on the Porter Music Box, and I recorded it. And what were we hearing? Well, okay, so with the computer, I was able to punch in a date and give me the stars above my head on that specific time. I chose 8:18:18 to the hundredth of a second a.m. on September 11th, 2001, New York City. Why? That's when my son was born, Spencer, who's named after Winston Spencer Churchill. So I took that star map, if you will, and that's how I created this. You see on the side here, and you know, we're not going to talk about all this, but on the side over there is the process that I used to make sure that we were accurately hearing what the stars were saying to us.
Well, so, that goes into you actually understanding what the stars are saying to you, which you captured in that. And I have to say, we've been talking about the power of the stars speaking to us, because just like spirit speaks to us, I do believe the universe, just like there's no coincidence, I believe the stars obviously speak to us. I think the learned astronomers and some astrologers understood that, the great ones, of course, understood that, and what that was like a magnet for them to explore what seemed like it was impossible at the time, just like you mm-hmm. do in mm-hmm. your music.
And, you know, it's not so much that it's a mystery even. Now, okay, so this is, I don't want to get like too deep here, but, you know, it says in the Bible that God placed the stars. He placed the stars. I mean, you got to think about that, just those words. And what does that mean? And what does that mean that some guy would, some kid, because I was 17 when I had this idea, right, would look up at the stars and go, they're making music. The stars are making music. You know, he did it on purpose to us.
Yeah.
So inspiration is a really interesting idea because, okay, so you listened to music of mine and it inspires you and you write these words that I could never write. Okay. No, what you don't realize is that when I see those words, I'm inspired. Right. So it's like this big, big circle of inspiration. It just keeps going and going and going and going. So I look at the words. Oh, by the way, a little surprise for you. So right before we had this little, whatever they call this, Zoom session, I wrote a 4-minute and 15-second piece for you.
Oh gosh.
Love Conquers All. And Love Conquers All was an idea that you had that all comes from something that you hear. So it's like this big, big circle.
And as you know, there's something that happens when that spirit does speak to you, which I see continuously. The fact is that when you open yourself to listen, then you have the responsibility of getting it out there, which sometimes, of course, you can't do on your own. You know, I found that out. I mean, if I could do everything on my own, it'd be wonderful, but I can't, you know, because I have mm-hmm. a lot of limitations. I have limitations mm-hmm. on time. I can't sing. I can't do scores, you know, et cetera, et cetera. So then you find beautiful people who understand how spirit works, like you. And that's where the magic comes in, you know, when things like that happen. But, you know, you could have stopped this project grade two, probably halfway through grade two, let alone going through grade two and three, because I believe that spirit kept saying, no, 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 knock, 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 knock. There's more. Wait a second. There's more. So you keep the journey going. And through that journey, let's talk about some of those other moments of magic that then bring us to understanding what does occur in life. The magic that you were able to say, I've got to get this out there. Maybe someone will hear and understand. And indeed they do. So we're really, with the learned astronomer, only maybe halfway through it. I don't think we have enough time to go through the whole, but there are some peaks and valleys on this journey that happen mm-hmm. that explain mm-hmm. life and death and what's beyond death that goes on to life again.
Mm-hmm.
And a couple of these pieces, I feel it's so strong. Maybe you could bring that track list up again and people okay. can see where you go through and try to explain so beautifully. I'm looking at this here. Again, we talked about the silence before the silence. Such magic happens in the silence before the silence. And that leads you up to some amazing journeys. And then you continue on here. And I mean, you have some amazing messages that come through this. And we went through Gethsemane and of course Catherine on that one. Mm-hmm. I absolutely loved again, not even she was her. And then you have the parting, which is so again touching. And then that beautiful song from the Valley of Heaven, which then after that you follow with Surrender, which I kept listening to this morning. Then you have the learned astronomer, and then a lovely piece that I love called The Question. And what is the question to you? Let's just kind of go and dip into the question and where that okay. question led you.
Okay. Now this one, I do have a picture for this one.
Mm-hmm.
And so when I was at Boston Conservatory, I wrote a piece for the orchestra But it never got played. It never got recorded. So I decided, you know what? I'm going to resurrect this piece for The Gray, because all of this, oh God, I got a chill. All of this is connected to the past. Here's why I got a chill. You see, it says 13 March, 1982.
Yes.
Okay. So 13 March, get ready. That's the day my grandmother was born. It's the birthday of Tom Quinn, the guy who's Quinny in Ahab. It's also the day that Dame Mary and I drove 3 hours and 33 minutes to Alexandria to record the star disc, as I call it, for the Porter Music Box. So everything. So when I saw this just now, I realized, wait a minute, there's a big connection with 313, which is, you know, the day that I composed this piece. And basically, you know, there it is. It says right there, in the stars, I see you like an open hand. Mm-hmm. If my thoughts can touch you, will you grasp my heart? Mm-hmm. On a cross, you waited for the light of hope. From the dark, I ask you, will you answer me? So you can see why this is a part of The Gray.
Yeah.
I bring to you this simple question from my heart. I ask it, can I sing to you, Lord? Do my words arrive? Mm. All my dreams will touch you throughout time. I call you. And so that was a piece that I wrote back then. And I realized that, wow, I got to put this back onto The Gray.
And it's a prayer.
Oh yeah. You know what? All of it is prayer. Okay. Since we're there, let me just point out this right here. You see how every piece you're going to see IGNA. Now, that's not an original idea, really, because Bach used to write something similar, always in God's name, or always to the glory of God. And he would put it so for Steve, because I'm not quite Bach.
Oh.
I write IGNA in God's name always.
I love it. Wow.
And you know what? I've written 1,200, and now with your new piece, 1,278 pieces. And I write IGNA on them because they are all prayers, you know, and here's the cool thing. I know you understand this. They don't really come from me. I mean, they come from above and they come through me.
Right.
You know,
everything I've ever gotten comes through me. And when you do that, when you just do that simple act of turning it over to God, knowing it comes from God and releasing it to God, that leaves the door open for magic to happen, to God's will to work so much better than we could ever have it work if it was just us doing the work. And I know you understand that. And we're going to have to do another part two, maybe three or four, because there's so much here. But I do want to let people know that not only are all these pieces out there, which again are something that you could listen to every single day, as I do, but there's also with it all the amazing stories that you have in the libretto, which you include, which is definitely worth, because the stories are so inspiring in themselves. And for me, I learned from how the stories and the inspiration work. And I also learned from listening, because it gives it like another dimension. So I have to say, I mean, I am so grateful to you for what you offer up to the world. I don't think I found what you offer up in anyone else. And it's so unique. And it's so inspiring for someone who really is looking for answers. I hear answers in your music to questions I might have. So in a way, when you offer up those prayers like you did in that, and in God's name, then it comes back to people who are looking through music for answers. So,
You know what? I think that's the most profound thing, you know, and you touched on this before, right? Each of us has a purpose and it's not the same thing, right? So last night I met a guy who he's one of those chop shop guys. He could like take a car apart, put it back together and make it look great. Well, I couldn't even think about how to do something like that, right? But here's this guy that could do it. And you're a person who can see the universe in words. And there's people who have all kinds of amazing abilities and talents, and we're all different. And, you know, and like in the post I made this morning, I basically said that, you know, you're priceless. You're, so when a person is listening to that music, in my mind, I'm thinking the person listening to this music is priceless. They could be in pain. Mm-hmm. They can be confused. They can be buried in gray. But if this music will help them to feed their own worth, then the music has served a great purpose.
Yeah, that is so true. And I see even beyond the worth, I see the light coming through the gray in your music. And that light lifts you to the spirit. It definitely does, because it's coming from the spirit. So I couldn't thank you more. And we're going to have to do a follow-up, because we didn't even begin to touch everything that is within this work. But I saw it kind of maybe halfway through the process, maybe it was three quarters, but I never could have imagined the whole thing there. But yeah, I'm so glad. I mean, I really am so glad to know that you are there dedicating your life to this work without any thought of like, well, maybe I've got to play by these rules of only doing two or three songs. What would have happened if you play the rules? Okay, we only release five songs at a time, you know, because you know, you went way over the limits of that in this piece, you know. So I know you're listening to your heart, and it comes across so beautifully, and you're listening to your soul, and it speaks. And we'll be talking more, I'm sure, in the future about this. Because I've got to do some follow-ups, because there's so much more to talk about.
Well, cool.
But we've been talking for a while, so.
Yeah, I don't want to bore the listeners out there. So I'll use your judgment, what you think is good. So.
Well, it's about an hour. So I think that's. We could do 36 hours. Why do you have 36 pieces? We could do 36 hours, I think, pretty easily, but. but we will definitely talk more in the future, and I can't wait to hear what you created this morning. Cool. God bless you, and really a big deep bow of gratitude to you for this wonderful, inspiring work and for everything you do.
Thank you.
Thank you. Until next time, aloha.
Okay. See you.
Okay.